And this is June.
And this week we watched Everything Everywhere All at Once. This movie was directed by the Daniels. It's considered a hilarious and big-hearted sci-fi action adventure about an exhausted Chinese-American woman who can't seem to finish her taxes.
I just have to get it out that I love this movie so much. I usually don't watch movies and really feel this attachment to them, but as soon as I finished this, I was thinking, I need a giant poster of it on my wall, and I need to meet Michelle Yeoh someday so that I can just not say anything to her, just stand in front of her like a crazy person and sob and just take her in.
Do you know what I did after? I put a googly eye on something in my house. Oh. I recommend putting a googly eye on something. Okay, I'm glad you loved it. You didn't like the last couple movies that I picked. So I was a little concerned. No, but there's no way. I feel like there's no way to hate this movie. Mm-mm. So June actually just finished watching this.
I did. And I feel a little bit bad because in the last episode, I was crying. And in this episode, I can already feel myself getting choked up a little bit. And I'm going to try and, like, tamp that very down because it's a little much. It's a little much right now.
We have such an emotional podcast. I mean, let's get the feelings out of the way then for that, because since it is kind of fresh on your brain, I do want to know a little bit more about what you were feeling as you were watching it.
I'm like, I literally just said that I was going to try and tamp it down, and Riley is out here like, okay, let's talk about these emotions. So, of course, there was, like, so much about the daughter, like, mother, and then, like, daughter-father relationship that was super emotional to me. But in addition to that, I think almost the most emotional about was how much I could see my way of approaching life in Evelyn in terms of, you know, feeling like a fighter and feeling like you have to push for what you want. And Joe being more like her husband. And sometimes I have felt like I have to be the one who fights for something. Because, you know, Joe chooses to see things in a different way. And I know that my God. I know that is something that, of course, like, doesn't feel good, right, from his perspective. And so it's not that I didn't understand that it was, like, a different way of him approaching it. But I think seeing this movie and seeing that character and seeing, I don't know, seeing, like, all the ways in which he was so strong that Evelyn didn't see, I don't know, I felt so sad for him, right? Like, all the times that, like, he obviously, like, loves her so much, and when she tells him, like, my life without you is so wonderful, I wish you could have seen it. And I think just seeing, like, a lot of Joe in that character was, like, super heartbreaking for me.
Aw. Yeah. Vic reminds me a lot of him in a lot of ways.
Really?
Yeah, and I wonder if this is saying a lot about just women in general, like, and just the role that we choose to take. I think for Evelyn, a lot of this is, like, a lot of this is something that she grew into. Not necessarily who she was always.
I think a lot of women are probably like that. Women are socialized to understand that things won't come easy at all. And you hear from the very beginning, like, even before you realize that you're experiencing it, that you have to fight harder, in addition to you having had to fight harder up until that point. And I think we just integrate it into our identity so much, right? Whereas, I mean, I definitely know that there are many, many men who approach it from a fighter perspective, but I think I've met a lot more men than women who take Wayman's perspective,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's their way of fighting, which is so hard for me to do, but I find it so, I don't know, I find it, like, really inspiring.
Yeah. That's a really big takeaway for me, too. And I think, obviously, Evelyn gets there as well, which is not seeing that as a weakness, but seeing that as, like, his way of going into battle,
mm-hmm.
which I think is so beautiful, because I've also been the person to see that and being like, oh, you're not taking anything seriously. Like, there are things that need to be taken seriously. You're not taking it seriously, instead of viewing it as, like, a gentler approach to life.
Mm-hmm. So for me, I would look at that perspective and I would view it as naive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there are times when I have definitely been passive, and times when I've chosen to see it from that perspective that have burned me. And my response to that was to completely reject it, right? So reject the use of it. And so I think there have been situations where I will feel like Joe is not being cynical enough. Joe is being too idealistic about what people are like, what situations are like. And if things turn out good, if things turn out better than I expected, then I feel that, hey, at least I was prepared for the worst. And if things turn out my way, then I feel vindicated in my, mm-hmm. in my approach, right? So either way, there's no negative feedback, right? There's no external negative feedback. Obviously, internally, it can do damage if it's not balanced. And I think that's been a lot of what I've tried to work on. That's what you mean?
Yeah, I've definitely, for myself, especially, been working a lot. It's kind of been my default to not necessarily take it out on, but my burden ends up becoming the burden of the people that I love most, aka Vic, ends up getting like the shit end of the stick when I'm working a lot, because I make everything else more important,
mm-hmm.
like more important than him.
So there was the scene with the two rocks. I felt that so hard, and honestly, when I watched that, I thought, wait, this would be such a good short. Just taken completely out of the movie, that would have been an amazing short.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel that way, that when, especially when I'm busy, but even when I'm not, there's always this expectation, this invisible expectation that I feel, right? And I think it is present, but the important part is that I feel it, right? To be doing something, to be striving for something. And there are times that I want to do that, but then I find that I can't bring myself back.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I try to intentionally take time to unwind, to meditate, mindfulness, all that good stuff, I can't. My brain is just, I start thinking, I don't want to take the 10 minutes because I can't relax. I'm just stressed about the next thing. I want to wait until everything is done, and then I can relax. And there are times that I've wished to just be in this sensory deprivation chamber, like literally just on a planet that has no life, because that's the only way that I feel like I could get silence in my mind, right?
Because it's a mandated. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. If I was just a rock, it'd be so great.
Yeah. Oh my god. I also... I can never fucking relax. And I also end up doing the same thing where I'm like, everything needs to be done now.
Mm-hmm.
And like, everything becomes the priority now. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I get to relax with Vic or whatever, I'm so exhausted because everything took up my entire day. And it's not like I get through what I have set out for the day and then decide that I'm done. I'm like finding more things to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you can always find like new things to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm getting better at that, but I can't really say.
And it's so hard to strike the balance,
mm-hmm.
because I think if you start pulling yourself back too much from having something to strive for or believe in or love, then you get towards the nihilism end where you don't want to do anything. You don't want to exist because there's nothing to exist for.
Yeah.
Right? And so there's this extremely intentional, super specific, difficult middle ground, right? Where, you know, ostensibly, hopefully, there's more happiness, but the issue is getting there, right? Because it's so easy to get to the extremes. Yeah. And then I think it's also easy to pull yourself back slightly from the extremes. I think it's easy if you're overwhelmed to say, I'll take 30 minutes at the end of the day. I won't feel any better. It won't change my life, but I'll take 30 minutes. Or if you're on the super nihilist end to say, yeah, I will, you know, push myself just the tiniest little bit. It won't really be meaningful to me. It won't actually be representative of all these hopes that I'm scared to have, but it'll feel like something that I can check off without me having to push my own mindset in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Not that those aren't victories, but I think sometimes they are comfortable ones that give us a false sense of having gotten closer to that balance without having to actually put in the work to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, make the sacrifices.
Yeah, I think for me, the balance has always been difficult because I'm just afraid of taking time and carving out time because I'm afraid that that can turn into the other extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I've always felt like it's safer to go too far the other way. Mm-hmm. And just always be on top of my shit because it's so easy. I don't know if it's so easy. I've convinced myself that it's so easy mm-hmm. to just completely fall off the wagon and then just
mm-hmm.
default to doing nothing mm-hmm. and not caring about anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with dealing with depression. And when I'm depressed, I automatically go that way. So I think the fear is justified, I think, to an extent.
I was literally going to mention depression because I fall into that same end where I feel scared of letting go so much that I'm never able to get back there to where I want to be.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is associating it with being depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're sliding into a depressive phase, I never notice it, right? I'm never thinking, you know, at the beginning of the slope. I never think, oh, this is my downward descent into deep yeah. depression. I think, I'm feeling a little tired. I'm going to make the decision to go to bed a little earlier today for myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly it becomes, I don't want to shower today. I don't want to get out of bed today. And it keeps going down.
Who's showering?
No.
No, I get what you mean. I have been a little more aware in like the last year or so-ish. I think we might have talked about this, but I've been a little more aware of it where I will do like depression check-ins with myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel, like I was telling you earlier, I've been feeling a little overwhelmed with stuff lately and just having a lot to do, I will just like kind of take the time to be like, okay, it feels like this could be the start of you becoming depressed because you're so overwhelmed. It seems like you could break pretty easily right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know where to go from there. But I do think that even being aware of that has actually helped a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much of a case study to go on.
Okay. I was going to ask, do you have a way of distinguishing when you're choosing to offload tasks because out of self-care versus out of depression?
This is still pretty new for me, doing check-ins and even of trying to be aware when it's happening, because it used to be the same exact way where it would feel like one day I'm fine and the next day I'm depressed, but really it's not like that. I mean, it's gradual,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't realize it until I was like deep in a pit of depression. Mm-hmm. And it's more recent that I've been trying to pay attention to things that historically have made me depressed, which a lot of times is, like, too many new things happening at once, or me feeling overwhelmed about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, your casual someone died. But, you know, just, like, regular day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I know that I've been consciously making an effort to... I get, like, pretty stressed out, and I think... Tell me if this happens to you, too, because I've been, like, bitching about this lately, just myself, about how they don't make calendars, or I haven't found one, for people with ADHD that mm-hmm. don't make me feel overwhelmed by looking at them.
Yeah.
Like, the Google Calendar just puts every fucking holiday that I don't care about there, and even though it's just a holiday, it takes up the entire, like, entire block on the schedule, and seeing that is overwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like I have another thing going on that day, even mm-hmm. though I don't. And I just want people to get rid of it, and it won't let me. But I've gotten a little bit better at looking at my week, the week beforehand, and minimizing the amount of things that I have scheduled in a day. Mm-hmm. And I usually won't have, like, more than one big thing scheduled in one day, mm-hmm. which today I have this, and I also have my daytime job, and that was a lot for me, but I was like, I can make this work, and usually it's just overwhelming the day before, mm-hmm. and then it's fine, but, like, I think that's helped in just looking at it the day prior, so on the day of, it's not overwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. And that'll help me actively make choices that'll ease my mind, which I think in turn does keep me from kind of sliding off and just automatically slowing down as a default to my depression, as opposed to me, like, maybe trying to bring it to a halt. Like, oh, if this is going to happen, let me make sure I don't get overwhelmed.
Do you feel like when you do slide into depression, do you get a sense of that nihilism, nothing matters, nothing's worth it?
Yeah, I think more so before having animals, because I always have something that's worth it with the animals. So even when I'm really, really depressed, I will still do everything I have to do with them. Mm-hmm. I do notice when I'm less present for things, like maybe I'm not playing with my dog as much, but making sure that they're okay, that still matters a ton to me, and I'm still aware of that. Definitely with myself, though, like, I'll easily end up not showering. I'm like, oh, I don't have to shower. Have I talked about this? But a big thing I've noticed is, like, how cyclical things are for me.
Yeah.
In regards to depression and just my life in general. I've been trying to keep track of which hobbies I start to pick up and let go of before I become depressed, because mm-hmm. that seems to be somewhat cyclical. And yeah, just like general things, like even how I dress becomes somewhat cyclical, like how much mm-hmm. I care about how I dress. If I'm feeling good, I will usually put a little more thought into how I dress because I like it and I like how it looks, as opposed to me feeling like, shit, it's not even a thought I have. Mm-hmm. Or like skincare or makeup or just doing anything like that, or what I eat ends up being pretty cyclical and indicative of what's going on. Am I answering any questions? You didn't even ask me anything. I'm just talking. You didn't ask me anything.
No, I was asking if you feel that nihilism.
Yeah, the nihilism. Yeah, I guess. Like not in a very overt, like, angsty teen, like, oh, nothing fucking matters, but definitely in the way that I treat myself and my life.
Mm. I see. Yeah, that makes sense. I find that nihilism is something that I really struggle with when I get depressed, and that is usually the marker of how I know I'm depressed, because, so in general, as a constant, I personally believe that nothing is objectively true, nothing objectively matters, and the things, like, and that makes what I choose to matter that much more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And when I get depressed, there's that break in finding the choice of meaning to be valuable, right? Mm-hmm. So I slide into the same kind of, I think, I really liked the way that they showed part of joy's nihilism being that she sees all these different possibilities, all these different potentials, and none of them are where she is. None of them are where she wants to be, including where she is, you know? And there's no joy in being in any of them, striving for any of them, thinking about any of them. And that's kind of... It won't be that I don't want to do things. It won't be that I won't have goals. I just don't really care. You know, I don't really care about practicing or journaling or submitting things. I will just say, well, I could have done that. And so what? So what if I get to this place that I used to think of as valuable? Nothing actually matters. It doesn't. Like, so what?
Yeah.
And it's difficult to, especially in the moment, to transition that from nothing matters and that's bad to nothing matters and that can be a strength, which is what I want to do, what I can do when I'm mentally better, but it's hard to get out of that, you know? And I cried so hard when Evelyn was like, in those few seconds you have, you know, where things make sense, you know, where your goals and your dreams and your life make sense, like, I'll cherish those. And I was like, oh, you know, because I think that that is what life feels like for me a lot, where there will be these periods of time where things make sense, you know, I wake up every day, I do my thing, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then times where it doesn't make sense why I would get up, it doesn't make sense why I would care.
Yeah. I think I'm less aware of my nihilism. I think that I've become more aware of when I'm feeling shitty, but not when... Because as you were talking, I was like, oh yeah, every time that I've gotten... Not every time, but oftentimes I've gotten very depressed, I quit whatever job I'm working. That is like a pretty hardcore pattern for me, and that is kind of extreme. You know, for most people, that would be kind of extreme that if you are depressed, you just make a big decision like that, you know, not extreme in an extreme decision for a depressed person to make, but I think extreme for like a normal person, a healthy state of mind, because it's your job and it feels, I've never regretted leaving of them, any of them after the fact. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I would have left them if I wasn't depressed.
I see.
There must be some nihilism attached to that.
I think, so, jobs are so, I think they're so difficult to work out because on one hand, the decision to quit a job motivated purely, or even not even making the decision to quit, but your performance being so poor that you're fired, right? Just like losing a job or quitting a job solely because of depression, even if you liked it, I think is one thing. And then I think that there's an amount of, I'm depressed, nothing matters, so I can change what my reality looks like and I can quit this shitty job and go for something that I've always been too scared of, you know, too attached to the safety that this current job bestows, and just say, fuck it, you know, I'm just going to do something else.
That's also always happened. Every time I've left a job, it's because I felt awful that I've left the job, and then I would do something that I previously found very out there or scary, or that I've always wanted to do, and then that is what I end up doing. Mm-hmm. And then I get caught up in another job again. Yeah, so maybe it's not nihilism, it's just work sucks.
So Yeah. So I know that, I feel like it's a pattern over the movies that we've done that you really like to take things as like the sci-fi supernatural perspective. And I feel like I like to watch it and think about what it symbolizes, even if that's not what the creator intended. I think for me, it just, I don't know. I don't think I can turn it off. I think my brain just does that. But when in the tax office and Evelyn starts, like thinking about all these like scenarios, these different lives. And then we also see that some of her joy I thought that that was a lot of, that was really similar to, for me at least, maladaptive daydreaming, where this reality fucking sucks right now, and I'm just gonna think about what if I was this, you know, really fucking awesome kung fu movie star, you know? I haven't had that specific daydream, because I guess I haven't been creative enough, because that's a really fucking awesome one. But there have been times where I would just think about, oh, this better version of me. And there was a specific quote. Yeah, when the Alphaverse Wayman is telling her, you're not the right one. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's also slots so perfectly into maladaptive daydreaming, because you imagine this better version of yourself and this better version of your life. Like, you are not the right one. You can't create this life. You just daydream and escape into it. And for me, that's what all these different universes, right, represented. Of course, there's like the other meanings about potential and decision and intentionality, but that was one sphere that really stood out to me.
So how does that play into, like, how does that play into your day to day?
So I think it's, so I'll be doing something mundane, right? I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head and I can't. But, oh, waiting in line to change my driver's license, right? And it takes like 8 fucking hours. And you're just standing there feeling like, wow, my life is so, it feels so mundane, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe this shinier, sparklier version of me in my life would not have these sorts of things. Like, everything would just fall into place. I would never feel bored. Nothing would ever be glum or drab, no matter the setting. Even if I was here, I would be here in a more glamorous way. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we get so caught up in the mundaneness, right, we, in general, right, and I think media plays a huge part in healthy daydreaming, about thinking, where could I be? What could my life be? And I think when you escape too much into that, that's when it becomes maladaptive, of course. But, I mean, do you have like an idealized version of yourself? Like an ideal life? Like, oh, you know, what if I was such and such? What if I acted such and such? What if, you know, acted like such and such, or looked like such and such? You know, like that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I even have like an ideal, like what I'd like to, where I'd like to be when I settle down with my life, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I daydream a lot about, I think that's how I end up bouncing around between things a lot, is because I get carried away. Yeah, like I wanna, not so much in the way that you're describing it, with like mundane things, where if I'm somewhere and something's taking a while, almost like as an escape, is that what you're kind of saying?
I think that's one of the ways that it happens, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm saying it now without really knowing for sure, but I don't think that I really do that so much as, no, I guess I do. I guess I do. I'm JK. I was taking your example, which is not something that not a place I ever like really find myself in, in a situation like that, so I guess I don't really think about it like that. But mundane and, like, getting ready for work.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, like, getting ready for work, I can easily, my mind will easily drift into many, many different versions of what my life could be. Mm-hmm. I've never felt as if it's me escaping. I actually legitimately think these things could happen. And I think I'm just mapping them out in my head. And it's like playing movie in your head. It's like, oh yeah, that will be so nice when I do that. Yeah, like retirement stuff. I always think about that, like retiring on a farm and just having a bunch of animals and having a little shop that I like sell little things, like little flower bouquets and like, I don't know, soap. There's no money in that. That's like
maybe at the point that you're retired and you own a farm, like, you don't need to make money. You've got all the money you need for the few years of your life that you have left.
Maybe. I just daydream about all sorts of stuff too, though, like complete nonsense.
I think for me, I definitely daydream a lot in general, but I think that when I daydream, when I'm depressed, a lot of it is what my life could look like if I did XYZ, which I'm not going to do. But then there's the feeling of, oh, I could be that. You know, I'm not doing anything to get there, but I could be that. And there's a sense of, there's something about that that is self-soothing, right? That you almost reassure yourself of, like, your potential, mm-hmm. right? And part of daydreaming means being separated from your reality, obviously.
Yeah.
And I definitely struggle with finding things in the moment, things in my life now to be grateful for and to ground myself in the specialness of any given moment, right? Or finding a way to make this moment that had felt mundane special.
Yeah. Yeah, do you ever watch those videos on YouTube of YouTubers like romanticizing their life, which is kind of embracing the mundane?
I have watched TikToks of them.
It's really difficult for me to do that without slipping into, we talked about this at some point.
Staying the same, not changing, right?
Yeah, like, it's, are we saying the same thing? Like, it's real hard for me to do that and then not act like I'm being watched or something. Not like someone's actually watching me.
Yeah, second episode we talked about this, yeah, where feeling like you are playing like a role,
kind of. Like the main character kind yeah. of energy. Right, so yeah. Part of it is, like, I become, like, hyper-aware of it mm-hmm. to the point where I feel like, yeah, I'm playing a character instead mm-hmm. of my actual life, which also seems kind of dissociative, you know?
Yes, and I definitely struggle with that as well. Okay, so here's my thing with romanticizing your life. I think that there is finding joy in the mundane, and I think that there is settling in a bad way. Not settling in a, I'm going to choose to be satisfied because this is an intentional thing, but I am going to choose this because I'm afraid of change. I'm afraid of other things. And I think sometimes romanticizing your life can fall into that, right? Where it almost allows you to become passive because you immediately, you're like, oh, I'm doing this thing that this is not where I wanted my life to be, but now that I can think about it like I'm reading this aesthetic book right. or whatever, now I can feel like it is special, right? Not because I have chosen for it to be special, not because it holds meaning to me, but because me viewing it through the eyes of someone else can impart specialness onto it. So then yeah. through that third, like this like third, this invisible third person POV, I can find value instead of directly feeling that.
Right. Which, are you saying that that might affect motivation to actually strive for something?
For me, it does. For me, it definitely does.
Which I think also ties into what we were saying before, which is finding the right balance. Because I think being able to romanticize your life in the, like, quote-unquote correct way is to feel really good about where you are now, but still being able to balance, like, finding motivation for other greater things, and then even romanticizing that and everything that comes with that.
Yeah.
People make it look so easy online.
I personally do not, I never assume that social media influencers who post these are doing it right. Not that they aren't.
No. Yeah. No, I think they're all full of it, and I think they're probably miserable too.
We're all who's not miserable today? Like, I would like to talk to a person who's not unhappy today. I would like to sit them down and have a discussion with them. Like, for real.
Yeah, is everyone unhappy?
I think everyone's unhappy. Maybe they're not clinically depressed, but I feel like there's just, okay, I'm not gonna say that everyone is unhappy. I think that everyone is actively fighting to not be unhappy with varying degrees of success, and I don't think that there is any person who is completely happy. You know what I mean?
Well, I definitely don't think there's anyone who's completely happy. I do think that I, like, experience happiness often, and I also experience unhappiness often.
Do you... That's interesting. Like, the concept of happiness is interesting. Do you... I guess, how do you define happiness for you?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to take that, right? Because that can mean very different things for us. And even the way that you're projecting onto someone else is still your definition of what happiness is, as opposed to what they might think being happy is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, like, I think I've gotten... It hasn't been very long that this has happened, but I feel like I've gotten a little bit better at slowing down. And things like just waking up and, like, you know, Vic brought me my coffee this morning, and then he, like, put up Christmas lights because he's obsessed with decorating the house now for holidays. And then I came back home from work, and he had put all of them up, so the house was just all lit up, and...
That's so sweet.
Yeah, and I felt like, oh, this is a nice life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, sure, I went to work and I was tired for a bit, but, like, it was a decent day at work still, and then I get to do this, and there are definitely parts of the day, like, parts of even just today, if we're just thinking very recently, today, where I'm like, oh, this is a nice life, and, like, I feel good, and this is... Even just waking up and getting, like, hot coffee in my hand, it was just like, oh, that's really nice. For me, that's equivalent to happiness. It's not, I'm not super excited about anything, which I don't think is happiness. I think that is, that goes beyond, you know, wherever your baseline is. There's stuff that goes up and down. And I think if I were to think of, like, what my happy baseline is,
yeah,
it is just... Like, bringing me a cup of coffee in the morning.
That's so, like, cute. So I asked that because I don't know. I think I've always been the kind of person who throws myself into being a workaholic. And this is a big problem with one of my first therapists, is that I used to have this terrible cycle of working myself to the bone for however many days I can hold out. I'm talking, like, 1 hour of sleep. I'm chugging coffee all day. I'm not resting at all. And then passing out, like, literally just going comatose for 24, 36 hours as a reset. And then getting up and doing it all over again. And that was my way of feeling like I am going somewhere. And that is where I have historically found my quote-unquote happiness. And I think to some extent that is just my personality. Even now, I say it's my personality. Maybe it's just so deeply instilled in me that it's become one, or I feel like it is. But there's always this underlying restlessness no matter what. Like, sweet moments, like, oh, like, you know, holding your cup of coffee and appreciating that, like, oh, this is nice. And I will have a moment like that, and there's a split second where this anxiety and restlessness that's almost gnawing at me doesn't come up, just for a split second, and then it's there, and there's this, I don't even know how to describe it, but there's almost this dissatisfaction with the moment, you know, like, oh, I want this moment, but I want it in a different setting, you know. I want to have achieved XYZ, to be XYZ having this moment. I feel upset that I'm having this moment when I'm not happy with everything else.
Wow.
And it makes so many things really difficult, especially holidays, where there's supposed to be time to just appreciate those small things, and it almost makes my anxiety worse.
I mean, holidays are, you're talking to the wrong person. I hate holidays. Aside from Halloween, I really suck, and I hate so many things about Halloween also, like the children, that it makes it, like, really difficult in general. But can you talk about it, like, outside of holidays, what that means?
Yeah, let me think.
Or about the holidays. I
just... No, I'm trying to think of a good example, because, so I hate the holidays, but I also love the winter and the dark and the cold, and I hate the summer and spring. So I really don't get seasonal depression. I'm actually, as miserable as I am during the holidays, I'm much happier now than I am any other time of the year, because I just hate heat and I hate light and all of the things associated with that.
Okay, so we are different in that way.
Okay, really?
Yeah, which I think is funny, because don't you live somewhere that's generally hotter?
Yes, and I'm trying to escape.
I live where it gets very cold. And I hate it.
So Joe was talking about this, because he does not like the winter. Like, the moment the daylight savings hits,
yeah,
he is like, I can't do this. I'm not having a good time. And that's right when my motivation to exist starts picking up. And so I would love to do, I can't remember if it's summers or winters when you never see the sun in Alaska, but whatever period of time it is when you don't see the sun, that's where I would like to be. But his being would disintegrate. That just wouldn't be a thing that we could do.
If I could live forever in like an autumn, like an early summer, like late spring, early summer night, or like an autumn night, that I would be forever happy. Not really, because I'd still have to live my life, but that would be temperature wise, daytime wise, like that would be the ideal for me, where it's not very hot, it's not cold, you know, there's a little bit of a breeze and it's dark.
It's funny you mention autumn, because I also think, temperature-wise, autumn is my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
But autumn makes me anxious. I don't know why. The fall time also makes me really anxious.
Is it because you have holidays coming up, or because you can't wait to be so happy when it gets really cold?
I think it's because it's the end of the year, and yeah. I feel like, oh, this window of time during which it's a really strong marker for a period of time passing, right? Like another mm-hmm. year, even though it's just another day like any other day, we have it ingrained that we think of things in years. And so for me, it's thinking about another chapter of time ending and that feeling like I wasted it, right? Like lost opportunity.
Is this kind of similar to, because I don't know if we've talked about you hating holidays also, but is this a little bit similar to why you hate holidays? Because there's the mark of time at the end of the year, which has expectation in it, that you've done something with the year and that you will be doing new things in the coming year. Is that kind of similar to why you don't like holidays? Because of the expectation around what a holiday means, and it's like a marker of this sort of expectation in life? Or is it something entirely different?
No, I think fundamentally it is the same thing, where for me personally, growing up, holidays did not look like, you know, what we are told holidays are supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of dissonance there and unhappiness that I just associate with holidays in general. And a feeling of not really knowing, you know, what a holiday is, like not really having that feeling to draw back on mm-hmm. of the warm, cozy, family bonding time that holidays are quote unquote supposed to be. And then I think separate from that, there's the anxiety about having wasted all this time and the realization that I can't tell myself like, oh, in a couple of months, it's still whatever, 2023. Right? It's no, like your year is ending. What have you actually done? Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, it's those main two things.
One, I want to know if you're someone who has or ever has set New Year's resolutions for yourself. too, I just wanted to comment on, that's why I also, like, really dislike my birthday. Because, which is funny, because you, I don't even know when your birthday is. We never talk about birthdays.
Nope.
Because I actually just don't really like my birthday for the same thing as, like, Christmas or something, which is that I feel like there's an emotional expectation attached to a birthday or a holiday, and mm-hmm. they never meet that. And I just feel very... It all feels very lackluster, just, mm-hmm. like...
Yeah, yes, that's such a good way of saying it.
Like, why is there all this build-up for my birthday, or this build-up for this holiday that ends up really not feeling like a whole lot? And I think that that in turn makes me really kind of resent those days and, like, having to do them. And, like, we just had Thanksgiving, and I felt... Like, you know, people, like, really, you know, let's get the whole family together and do this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm there, and it's just kind of miserable, you know. You're seeing these people you don't really see any other time of the year. Why are we doing this? Like, you're not the people that bring me joy day to day. And then we're engaging in small talk, and it's... That cannot be what we were building up to, you know?
Yes, yeah. It's... No, I completely agree with you. There's a feeling of emptiness on the day.
Emptiness, yes. Oh my gosh, pure emptiness.
And it sucks so much, especially as an adult, being able to kind of craft my own holiday experience when you're a kid, right? And feeling like, wait, I think this is what holidays are supposed to look like, but they don't feel anything like I thought they were supposed to feel. Like, they felt more like holidays when I was a kid, even though I have more trauma associated uh-huh. with that than now. Now it's like the magic is gone, and now I am carrying out these performances almost, but I'm not getting anything out of it. I don't feel anything. And I think that dissonance is also really isolating, even though I think probably many people feel that. But you don't talk about it because then you're like, whatever, that person who's just bringing everyone down. Like, why are you being so fucking, like, emo right now? It's literally Christmas. Like, just fake it, okay? You know?
I tell everyone I hate Christmas. it's just one of those holidays where it makes no sense to me. I try to get... Wait, I still want to know about if you do New Year's resolutions, but with holidays, I try as generous. I don't try very hard, but I would like to be one of those people who cares a little bit more about my birthday for the sake of others.
Mm.
But then I feel like I've done that. You know, I feel like I've already done things for the sake of others. So on that day, I feel totally justified to just be miserable and feel empty and feel like this day is not worth it. But something like Christmas that I really don't like, that I do think for some reason, even in its unconventional way, did have, like you're saying, more Christmas spirit in it when I was a kid.
Right.
Vic still really likes to do things like that. He has, like, talked about the feeling that he gets when he comes home and he can see a Christmas tree lit up through the window.
Okay, I do like that. I do like that. You do. I do, yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. So then you do like aspects of it.
I'm about to contradict myself.
You're like, I fucking love Christmas.
I will feel an intense coziness and an intense feeling of loss and emptiness at the same time.
Okay.
And that's on day, like, not on Christmas Day. On Christmas Day, I think there's just emptiness. But on the days leading up to Christmas, there's this warmth when I see a Christmas tree. And there's, I think it's less emptiness and more despair.
Do you think the warmth is almost like hope? Like a unconscious kind of hope that you might still have, and then once the day happens, it's just pure disappointment because it's never what it's
painted. I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think, that's such a poignant way of putting it, right? It's like living for hope and not living for, like, any specific thing, right?
Which is what those days do, and I think that's why they feel so empty and miserable. Because it makes it feel like you're living for that day.
Yeah, and then the day gets there, and you've been living for the hope of this specific benchmark, and now that's gone. You have to find something else.
And everything else was fine before that.
Exactly.
That's why I think Halloween's great, because we end up just celebrating for the whole month. For me, it makes it all very enjoyable, as opposed to focusing on this one day. I think if other holidays were more cool, and they had other things that you could do.
No, I agree, because, like, the day after Christmas, I mean, what do you do the day after Christmas? Everything's closed. You know, you just had Christmas. Like, Christmas is the event of the year. Like, it's the thing that the year basically builds up to. You know, in school we had those paper chains that had the number of days to Christmas. Yeah. And it would have, like, 360, however many. And you'd take off a ring. You know, you'd, like, rip one of the chains. And it takes a day down. You're just counting down to Christmas all year. And then you get there. And what do you do the day after?
Wait, so do you New Year's resolution?
Oh, no. I'm about to, like, reveal myself. So, I think that I basically do New Year's resolutions for myself on a weekly basis or like a daily basis, depending on how unhappy I am with where I am in the moment. So yes, I do New Year's resolutions, and they are never any different from the resolutions that I always have with me at any given moment.
What do you mean?
So like, okay, if I'm trying to think of an example.
Like, is drink more water an example? Like, if that's your resolution for the day, that's also, like, your resolution for the year kind of as an example? Is that...
I feel like what I'm about to say is going to explain why I'm such a miserable person. So I do not allow myself to view things as drinking water, taking my meds, my vitamins, washing my face as resolutions to keep. They are what I must do at a baseline, and not accomplishing those is like a failure of the day, not a failure of a resolution. My resolutions are more like, I'm going to work on this project for X number of hours. I'm going to accomplish this milestone by putting in this amount of work or by meeting these benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And that is what I carry with me all the time. And that is also what I think about for New Year's resolutions. And then the moment that I hit a benchmark, I just, like, keep upping that ladder. Like, I'm never actually happy with where I am.
Do you find the motivation to, like, always hit the benchmarks?
And that's the thing, right, is that when I'm doing well, yes. And when I am not, I do not have the motivation. So they weigh on me more heavily, and it pushes me more into that nihilism because I feel so much more acutely like a failure, right? To an almost unbearable degree.
Yeah.
And I think my coping mechanism is to say that this feeling of failure is, like, basically what Joy says, is that the feeling of failure is meaningless because none of that mattered to begin with.
What's an example? Like, do you have a New Year's resolution that you're...
I guess I don't really think of them as, like, resolutions. They're more like agendas. So one of my examples is, like, to set aside, like, at least 2 hours a day for, like, practicing monologues and scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that is, like, an unrealistic amount.
That's a very unrealistic amount.
And that's what I feel comfortable with. Like, I don't want to bring it down to 15 minutes because then I feel like I can hit that and then I'm going to be unhappy with it.
But have you met the 2 hours a day?
So I meet it some days and I don't meet it other days. Right. And so then when I need it, I have that motivation to keep going because I know that I can do it. And if I don't meet it, then like I'm stubborn, right? So I'm going to meet it the next time is kind of the thing.
Okay.
Right. So I live for that pushing myself further because I don't know how to be still in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I see the misery. Yes.
Yeah. But I also kind of like that about myself because, and this is probably just me justifying it to a large extent, because I like that I like parts of how I'm uncompromising and stubborn, you know?
Yeah.
I think that sometimes, like Evelyn, right? And one of the things that Alphaverse Wayman says to her is that she gave up on all these different paths, right? And I like that even if I go through periods of time where I feel like giving up or where I do give up, I will never completely give up, right? And maybe part of that feeds into my constant misery, but I also like that about myself. You know, I wish I could balance it more.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, I do like that part of me.
I mean, I wish I had a little more of that.
Really?
Yeah, because I will set out goals for myself. And I can keep up with them for a bit. And then, done.
Is it easy for you to let them go?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Usually pretty easy for me to let things go. I'll go pretty hard on something for a while and then get very focused on the fact that, like, yes, I'm doing this, this amount that I set out. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it this often. And then I will, like, skip a day and then I'll do it again. And then it gets easy to skip 2 days and then 3 days. And then it's just not even. Then I feel guilty about letting it drop.
Mm.
Like, it's really difficult for me to get motivation for working out.
Mm.
Working out is one that I always, like, pick up, and then I'll be good while I'm doing it, but if I miss a single fucking day, I'm done.
But you keep returning back to it, right?
Yeah, because part of me, like, knows, for whatever reason, whether it's good for me, good for something else that I'm doing, something I, like, should be doing. Like, I'll end up trying to pick most things back up.
And I think you have exactly then that quality.
But it won't be in, like, a time frame that makes sense.
You know? Elaborate.
Like, it won't be, you know, that I am working out consistently for 3 months. Then, you know, I missed a week, so then I completely stop. It might be another 2-3 years before I pick it up again. You know? And so every like 2 years, I work out for a few months. You know? Or like every couple of years, I'm consistently writing in my journal. Or every couple of years, I'm like making sure that I eat breakfast every, you know? Like it's just, there's so much space between me dropping something and then picking it up again, because then I'll get caught up just doing other nonsense, and then I'll set like a new goal for myself and something else, and that becomes very important.
Mm-hmm. And that's so interesting, right? That we, I find so much reason to keep living in setting those goals, you know, even though, I mean, and this is depressing to say out loud, right? I'm like, oh, now I feel myself, like, feeling a little bit numb. It's like, okay, these goals don't mean anything to anybody else. Like, I recognize that. And objectively, they mean nothing in general. But for me, if I think of it from my strong perspective, it gives me a reason to keep going, just having that goal. You know what I mean? I don't have to think about the Christmas at the end of it. I just have to focus on doing it and not think about the outcome. And that's when I'm happiest, right? as long as my body can keep going, right, until I overwork myself, because I don't want to find that balance in the moment. That's where I'm happiest, and it's not a sustainable happiness at all.
You do end up dropping things?
I do end up dropping things. I think my time frame, it'll usually be a couple of weeks or even a couple of months will go by before I pick it up again, or it'll be like a total career pivot and I drop that and it's over and done with. That is
right, okay,
a different life.
Okay,
not
yeah.
Yet, but never go back.
Yeah, I've done that.
Do you ever feel that, I guess, do you always have a very strong idea of where you're going to pivot when you have changed careers? Is there ever that intermediate emptiness?
No.
Oh, there isn't for you? Like, you don't have, like, uncertainty or emptiness?
Oh, no. I don't have a clear path, is what I was saying.
Gotcha.
I don't have a clear path. I think my desire to always want to be doing something is what has always made it that I've fallen into something that I probably always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then I don't have the burden of whatever I was doing that I absolutely hated. So I can transition to that. And then most often, those things that I really wanted to do make no money. Even though they take sometimes even more work than the thing that I was doing for money. They make no
money. Oh, absolutely.
And then I'll end up in that cycle all over again of like, oh, I need to be a well-adjusted member of society. I need to be making a certain amount of money just to feel like I'm contributing actively in society, even though mm-hmm. I feel like I've contributed more when I wasn't doing jobs for money and I was doing things that made me happy. Mm-hmm. I felt like I contributed a lot more. At any of these paying jobs, there's a goal. Whether it's like, this is our quota, this is how many sales we have to make, this is how mm-hmm. much we have to earn this month, this mm-hmm. is how many new customers we need to onboard. You know, there's always this like big thing that you're working towards. And then when you get to that, then there's a next big thing that you're working towards. And you're always in this like weird anticipation of like, yes, we're working towards this thing, which it does motivate me to work harder in those jobs. Mm-hmm. But what I'm prioritizing is flawed for me and doesn't really drive me on a personal level long term. Yeah. It's very good motivating me short term.
Yeah, I see that.
And then long term it doesn't, and I'll end up leaving a job, not knowing what I'm going to do for a little bit, but my brain is always like going and kind of just wanting to fill that space with something, mm-hmm. and then I'll end up picking up some random thing that I've always wanted to do.
I feel that. I also feel really similarly when I've done more traditional paths. And there's also something really nice about somebody else giving you the milestone to work towards, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to think about it. You just do your work and then you get like that dopamine hit when you get that email or survey or whatever that you met this goal, right?
Yeah.
But I think like you, after a little bit, especially as, you know, as you advance, it gets harder, right? And I start thinking about, well, why am I doing this, right? Because it's taking up all this part of my life. And after a certain point, those like momentary hits of dopamine for hitting this artificial milestone doesn't feel good any. It doesn't bring about that same rush because you're so used to it. Mm-hmm. And then I think about, well, so why am I doing this overall? And I can't answer that. And then I just can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could. I choose not to.
And a lot of people do. A lot of people do keep doing it.
And I kind of wish that I was the kind of person that was happy continuing to choose to do that.
I do
that.
Too. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
It's really, no, easy is not the right word because I don't want to take away from what people do. People are working really hard out there and it's not easy, but I think that it's less terrifying.
Yeah, it is less terrifying.
Yeah, because oftentimes I'm just, I will easily give in to my breaking points too. And that is scary in a whole different way that has nothing to do with my career path, but just my emotional state and my mental state, and again, being afraid of, like, oh, is this always how I'm going to be? Just this person that yeah. just kind of, oh, that was too much, bye.
I really struggle with that, too, knowing what is pushing myself to a good degree, a growth degree, versus what is you spinning your wheels and burning yourself out immediately.
Mm-hmm. Man, so when I started this new job, I talked to Vic about it beforehand a lot because Vic has seen me kind of dig this hole for myself every time I've had a job. I will be the best worker, you know? I'll be, like, on top of everything. Anyone is not doing all their work, I'll pick it up, I'll put it on my plate, you know? There's any void in some area, I'll fill it, you know? And I will completely overwork myself. And I will always be available, whatever it is. I will make myself fully available. And I wanted to make sure that with this job, I didn't get to that same place where I am, where I feel like my entire existence is just for whatever job I'm in. And I completely burn myself out to the point that all I can do is completely remove myself from it because I've become too invested. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure it didn't happen here. So I talked to Vic about it, and I, like, kind of set parameters for myself. Where I'm like, okay, I'm going to occasionally turn down certain shoots they want me to do. Because this ties back in a little bit with the fear of letting go. Because you don't know if you're going to go all the way one way or another. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to trick my brain actively into thinking, like, yeah, sometimes we say no to things, you know? Or else it's very easy for me to get caught up in the cycle of yesing everything and doing everything and that getting so carried away and me getting the dopamine that comes from when you say yes to people and they're like, wow, great job. And then you say yes, and then they give you more work and it just keeps on escalating. Mm-hmm. So I've tried to be more intentional about these are the days I can do things. It doesn't mean I'm not flexible. I still try to be a little bit flexible, but I've been very mindful about, like, say no to this thing. Even if you can do it, say no, because your brain's so dumb, it'll think that, like, this is just what we do.
Wait, I kind of love that, though, that you just decided this was going to be who you are, and so now not doing that is almost like going against your identity, which is more uncomfortable than doing the uncomfortable saying no.
Because I knew this wasn't going to last long for me if I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's always what happens. Like, I'll do something for a few years, get completely burnt out, sacrifice my personal life and my relationships to do this thing.
Yeah.
And I knew that would happen again if I didn't go into it with more intention.
This is probably a really trite question, but what do relationships mean to you?
Can you elaborate?
One of the themes of the movie was the finding meaning and happiness in your life, partially through your family and your relationships.
Yeah.
Like, within the community, with your friends. And that's a really prominent theme in general, like just in anything human, right? Yeah. Us being our social creatures and whatnot. And that for a long time was, and I think still is, difficult for me to truly comprehend. Right, so growing up, there are no relationships that I cherished and no relationships that were safe. And so I, you know, like, whatever, you watch, like, Ed and Eddie Christmas Edition, yeah, or Charlie Brown, like, all of these, like, family is important, friends are important type themes in movies. And I would always be like, I don't know. I have never had a relationship that, I think more than I could cut off, there was never a relationship that I intentionally sought to maintain, no matter, like, the discomfort around it, if that makes sense. Not something that I would turn to as a place to ground me, a place to find fulfillment, a place to, like, provide meaning to someone else. That was never really a concept for me. And so I think that that continues to be a difficult thing to really understand, right? Mm-hmm. Even having been in relationships and, like, being with Joe, right? It is true. It is difficult for me to find solace in that relationship, or to seek comfort in it, almost. Like, a comfort that makes me feel at peace.
Like, in just having this relationship.
Yeah, I think.
Right, like, beyond anything else. I think it's easier for me to answer it in regards to, like, since you mentioned Joe, I think it's easier for me to answer it in regards to Vic. Just because if anyone was here for last week's episode, they know we had weird, weird relationships with our family. So, similarly, I wouldn't really, there were no healthy attachments there. So, that wouldn't really be useful. With Vic, and probably even with my siblings, I could talk about this, but just to keep it easy, with Vic, I think I do find solace in that. And I don't know that it's always been a constant, but...
Wait.
Yeah.
Can I ask what does that mean to you, finding solace in a relationship?
Yeah. So Vic may not be the best at comforting me, like, in a very explicit sort of way, like, something happened and I need to be comforted. He's not great at that. He's aware, you know, he's working on it. Just different ways of growing up. But he is able to comfort me in a lot of other ways, day to day, and making me feel very secure. Mm. Dude, like, really something as simple as him bringing me my coffee in the morning. I'm like, wow, I have someone to bring me my fucking coffee in the morning. And, like, today, I, like, thought about it afterwards. I was like, wow, this guy, like, is aware of when I woke up, timed, you know, okay, she's been on her phone a little bit, just laying there in bed. Now would be a good time to bring her coffee. You know, he doesn't do it, like, as soon as I wake up ever, because he knows I won't even be there for the coffee. You know, it's just, there's a security and safety in that maybe doesn't always feel secure or safe, because nothing is constant. At least for me, I don't think anything, probably for most people, nothing is constant.
And that's my thing, like, how do you sit in that security and safety in the moment, knowing that it's not constant, knowing that it might not always be there?
Yeah. I mean, I've struggled with that a lot.
We sound like street urchins, where it's like, we never had enough to eat, and so now the moment that you give us a, like, a loaf of bread, we're like shoving it in our faces. The skin is gonna be ripped from our hands. Is that not what we sound like? I feel like that's what we sound
like. Like our voices or just what we say?
No, just like our like thought, like at least like my thought process.
I think you can say we. I always think it's so funny when you say we and then you change it to I because I'm like, no, I think you can say we. I think most oftentimes you can probably get away with saying we. Yeah. Okay. So I've definitely struggled with this, which, you know, this movie, I think, really highlights, which is like sense of satisfaction, something mm-hmm. specifically your own relationship. Even Riemann, who has such a interesting way of looking at the world and circumstances, can still struggle in a lot of ways. I've definitely struggled with feeling satisfied, and I don't think it'll ever be perfect, but I think I told you about the me going like TJ Maxx and thinking everyone was kind of gross for wanting, you know, and this idea of wanting. And that honestly has helped me a little bit in feeling a little disgusted and wanting and trying to value what I actually have and like how that translates into other areas of my life, like my relationships, and not wanting the stuff I don't have and comparing everything to what I don't have. Kind of like how Evelyn, yeah, that line that you brought up of my life without you, you know, that's so harsh.
Yeah.
It's inherently a negative way of looking at something. It's without you. Whereas like, what is my life with you? And when I think of like what my life is with Vic, it is way more than what my life is without Vic in so many. Are there obviously things that could be different or like areas of my life that might be enriched? Maybe. But I have so much. Yeah, I don't know. He brings me coffee. I don't know. You know, if I'm on my period, he'll go fill up my hot water bag for me. He's like perfected the method for filling up the hot water bag for me. And there's just, I don't know, someone knowing, being a little more attuned to you in that way, and knowing that, like, I have someone, and that's, to me, is so special that I get to experience life while having someone who's more attuned to me, feels really good. And I can latch on to that when I need to, and when I'm struggling with it, I do try to remember that. And again, I do always try to think of dying as well. Because
that will keep me in check sometimes. Think of the everything bagel.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of, yeah. It is like the everything bagel. It helps. I don't know. It helps me. It definitely helps me to put everything on a bagel.
I think that I don't know how to feel that.
And I feel like this, for me, feels like this weird in-between time of what it must feel like, which I've completely forgotten now, of what it feels like to transition from being, like, a child to, like, a teenager or something, where now you do different things in your free time. Now your relationships with people look different. What you watch on TV looks different. You know, what you think about looks different. But there's this in-between time where you're kind of still, there's still like a tether to who you were as a child. And maybe you still take out your Barbie dolls once a week and you don't play with them every day. But there's that weird transition period, you know, where you haven't completely let go until it kind of trickles away. Mm-hmm. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that made a lot of sense.
So I feel like I'm in my in-between time of where I was in, like, my 20s, and then where I am now is kind of my in-between time for where I'm gonna be.
Gotcha.
I'm not a fortune teller. I have no idea what this is gonna look like. But it just feels like an in-between time.
Do you feel like, okay, so when you were talking, the feeling that I had was that At the extreme of, like, greed, essentially, there is definitely this feeling of disgust that I have. But in general, I hold on really strongly to that feeling of greed, like, my feeling of greed, because I feel like that's why I was able to claw myself out of where I was as a kid, right? Like, the way that I was able to go to school and, like, get opportunities for myself is, like, it was literally, like, blood, sweat, and tears clawing my way up because I wanted something.
Yeah.
Right? And now I want to be able to want things and be able to let go. Even just in the moments. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It does make sense because I've definitely felt that.
Do you never feel like you will slide back into having less than what is survivable on, if you don't want?
Like, financially, or what do you mean
specifically? Yeah, I think financially overall, right? So, like, slide back into not having, like, opportunities, not having, like, food, not having shelter, not having, like, relationships. Like, do you ever feel like you'll ever slide?
I mean, that's definitely been a fear, probably that I still have, where it's like, one day Vic could decide to just leave, you know? And I could lose everything I have. Yeah, that's real. But I also think that I think I've overcome enough at this point to know that, like, nothing is constant. And me being in a pit of shit will not be constant. That won't help me when it's happening. But it helps me not focus too much on how much I fear. And this all plays out at night when I'm sleeping, though. Every horrible anxiety that I have about my life and every disaster that could be or has been or whatever, like, they occupy space in my brain, for sure. Just not so much in my waking life. Because it's easier for me in my waking life to be, like, very sort of on top of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not like I don't have the fear of going one way or another. You know, I think it's just, it doesn't help me, is ultimately what it is. Because it doesn't help me because I can prepare everything and things can go completely a different way. Mm-hmm. And I've had that happen where, like, I want to plan for X, Y, Z, and you've done all this planning, and then still things go to shit. Mm-hmm. And then I feel even more miserable because I'm like, well, I thought it was going to be okay. You know, like, I put all this effort into making sure this thing was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even, you know, because it's just infinite. So, yeah, personally, it doesn't help me to think about. Not like I haven't done that, but it doesn't help me anymore, or at least right now in my life, to think about, like, the what ifs, because that can go on forever. And I think it just makes me unhappy.
That makes sense. So, I think hearing you, a couple of things really stood out is that the accepting that nothing is constant except change has always been just a really difficult thing. Like, I think I only see the bad in it. I only see change as being what I would lose, not what I would gain or could gain.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I think there's also this really, like, white-knuckled grip on the idea that my fear has protected me so far. That I, like, through my fear, right, I made decisions, the decisions that I thought were best, and those decisions did turn out well. And so now I feel like letting go of that fear is letting go of the only protection that I have against random horrific circumstances of life.
No, you know? That makes a lot of sense. And honestly, this is, it sounds like silly to say, but it is really why I feel like I'm in a weird in-between time. Because I do feel like I'm just starting to, like, feel that balance of going from, like, fearing everything all the time to let me focus on what I have, and the fear is not going to help me. Like, I can let go of that now, because I will experience the fear when I need to, because it will happen. Like, there will be scary things that happen. Mm-hmm. And being able to balance, like, where I am now and trusting myself a little bit to know that, like, I'll be able to deal with the fear when it comes. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, I think there was a time in my life where it did protect me, being afraid and treating everything with caution in a lot of ways, and then in a lot of other ways not. But yeah, I think there's something valuable there. And again, it's weird because I don't know. I'm also still super young, so it's this weird thing where, like, I don't know what the rest of my life looks like.
Yeah.
And I might look back and just be like, oh yeah, my 30s were great, and then everything else was horrible. You know? But I also don't want to think about that, because it is super depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, right now this is great. And stuff sucks. There are a lot of things that happen that just, like, suck, but for the most part it's pretty great. And I don't want to be the thing that gets in my way of, like, enjoying something and, like, enjoying my life, which is definitely something I've done in the past, which is just, like, you can't experience this thing fully because you're too afraid.
I feel like it's a lot of where I exist, yeah.
I think, like, I know for me, like, that made a lot of sense for a really long time. When you know, I think for you too, like, we grew up scared.
Yeah.
And being scared is how you then protected yourself, you know? It's like having that extreme fear all the time made it so that you could push through and do other things. Before talking to, like, a therapist about depression and stuff, I was always afraid of, oh, I'm going to be like my mom. Mm-hmm. And that is always thinking that I was just going to end up in that other extreme.
But, like, yeah, like, you can, like, let it go, like, laugh about it and not dismiss it. And I feel like that's a really powerful thing.
Again, right now. Yeah, it feels
in the moment.
Yeah.
You're like, when the stakes are low, yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you a few of these questions? Like, what's the word for that where people do, like, fast questions?
Speed round?
Like a speed round.
Okay. Only if you do it too. Only if you answer
okay,
too.
Okay. Speed round? Ready? Speed round.
I'm ready.
Okay. Okay. What are the other Junes doing?
Oh my god. Okay, there's so many things.
In the multiverse.
Like, I think another June would have, like, abandoned all civilization and gone to work in, like, wildlife rescues and, like, rainforests, right?
I love that.
I think that is, like, the, not what this June is going to choose to do. But that is what the other June, one of the other Junes is doing. One of my favorite other Junes.
Oh, I love that.
Because there's a hierarchy. There are, like, Junes that are like, eh, you're trash.
Like, you had a hobby at some point that maybe went there. It was like,
eh. Yeah, exactly.
But not that great. Okay, Riley's a really good Riley. She would be an anthropologist.
I wanted to be an anthropologist so bad in high school. Girl, I can't with this. I can't with this. Wait, you saying that makes me want, like, an Egyptologist, June, who, like, goes into the pyramids, Indiana Jones style, and just, like, you know, does the Egyptology thing. Whatever Egyptologists do, that's really cool.
I didn't know that was a word. I didn't know it was a thing.
Wait, really? Okay, so I know it from Scooby-Doo, so...
So it must be real.
It must be real. You can't tell me it's not real.
Yeah.
And then I consult anthropologist Riley, and then we just as freaked out in that other universe.
Okay, I don't know if it's the same question. Maybe it's not. Which universe would you like to step into for a bit? Which Juniverse? Ooh, I like that. Juniverse? Oh.
Oh my god, Juniverse. Oh my god, there are so many things that I would like to experience. I want to step into the Juniverse where I, like, rule a country.
Whoa.
If that universe exists, if there's a way for, like, my path in life to have become that, that's the universe I want to see. I can't imagine myself as a country leader at all, and so that's why I want to see it.
I couldn't either. I wouldn't want to live in the country.
I'm moving out of this country immediately.
I'm going to migrate somewhere else, yes. Well, the fact that you said rule, I feel like that's like, I feel like that's what it would be. You would, like, get all this power and just rule and destroy. And I just picture you being, like, what's her face in Game of Thrones?
Blonde hair?
Many of them have blonde hair.
The incest one? Cersei?
No, Cersei, not Cersei. No.
Daenerys?
Yes, Daenerys.
Like, really?
Who ends up getting all this power, and it, like, seems, like, really great and helpful and harmless at first, and then it just all goes to your head, and you're, like, setting things on fire, you know?
Oh. I mean, I think we'd skip the part where, like, I think I'd pump it into my head. I'd air pumps, like, pumping it straight to my head. Like, I want to see where this goes. Your universe.
I am, now I feel like I have the top ruling a country, but I don't. I don't have the top ruling a country. What?
Right.
Which one would I want to step into for a bit?
I want to see Mean Girl Riley. I want to see, like, Regina George Riley. That's what I want to see.
That would feel nice for, like, a little bit. Yeah.
But see, you would also be a ruler, right? Roll with, like, an iron fist.
A school, like a high school.
And all the teachers in it.
Yeah, this sounds way less cool than ruling a country. Which Riley? Maybe, like, traveling gypsy Riley.
Ooh, you know, I like that.
Who just, like, reads people's palms.
I would love to see that, Riley. That would be really cool.
To just have this weird confidence of, like, yes, this is my life, and people listen to me. Also kind of, like, ruling.
Yeah!
Oh, what would you do if Joe approached you the way that Wayman approached Evelyn with the idea of a multiverse and all the other nonsense that came about?
Wait, this is the question that I'm most prepared to answer.
Okay.
So... I don't know if this is just me talking out of my ass because it hasn't happened, but I feel like I have read so many books and watched so many movies where the person is like, no, there couldn't be a talking cat. No, that's not a portal to another universe, that I would immediately believe it. I'd be like, yeah, that's the world we're living in right now. Because I've learned from all of these things that resistance is futile. Like, the denial is futile.
How long would it take you to believe it, though? Because initially you might think that Joe's just messing around with you, right?
No, Joe is not. I know that you've never met Joe, but Joe is not someone who could pull that off at all.
No.
No. Like, he might make a joke, but it's really, it'd be really obvious. Like, if he was serious, I'd be like, okay, you're serious.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so funny, because I feel like, yeah, because I've never met Joe. I've had the the privilege of being able to craft Joe in my head.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I feel like I never want to meet Joe. Because, like, we have this idea.
You'd be disappointed.
No, not even disappointed. Just, like, I feel like I know Joe.
Uh-huh.
And then I feel like if I met Joe, I'd be like, oh, I don't know Joe.
She's the person in my head.
Like, who's this Joe? Okay, so Vic is such a jokester.
Gotcha, okay.
Super jokester. He's, like, always hiding. Like, he'll randomly start playing hide-and-go-seek. Like, I leave a room to go get something, and then I come back and he's hiding somewhere in the closet or under something. He's, like, always trying to make something a game.
He's gonna go missing someday, and you're gonna, and the cops are gonna ask you, like, it's been 48 hours, like, you're like, I don't know, sometimes we play hide and seek. I'm innocent.
So good at hide and seek, you guys. He's actually really bad at it. Every time I walk into a room and I don't see him immediately, I know exactly where he is. It's like open and he's right there. And it's always a different place, but I do know where he is. I could just sniff him out. Yeah, so I would initially think he's joking.
Mm-hmm. So would it be the moment that, like, someone's trying to kill you that you'd be like, okay, maybe this has some validity to it?
I would think he set something up.
Oh my god!
Like some sort of experience for me to be a part of, you know?
So you'd have to die in that multiverse and see that as another multiverse you to believe it.
No, if he... So I would play along, like, if we were in an elevator and he gave me the thing, you know, it's like, oh, do all these steps. I probably wouldn't do what Evelyn did necessarily because I would be pretty nervous about my taxes. But if it were somewhere else, yeah, I'd probably just to play along, go through the steps. If I then experienced for myself what she experienced, that is probably the only time I'd really be like, okay, this is legit. It would take that.
I gotcha, okay.
Yeah. If it were putting me at risk, I know Vic wouldn't put me at, like, in physical harm. Mm-hmm. So I would believe it if it came to, like, that, where I might get hurt.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah.
That's fair, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I was like, God, like, you don't have to die before you believe him.
It's a wrap,
awesome, okay.
It's a wrap.
We will see you in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. We'll see you next time.
Spend 5 hours watching Maniac with us.
Watching Maniac the Minister.
We'll have really cool things to say about it.
Yay.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.